Well, in all the years I've been preaching about anything, I've never been so tempted to just preach somebody else's sermon on this Sunday. I was reading, I get, like everyone else who has email, I get these daily things from various places, and discovered a while ago that you can get just quotes from Frederick Buechner, who I don't know if you're familiar or not. And one of the things they provided was a sermon that he preached on this whole idea of the daughter of Jairus. I was talking over with Heather. She said, oh, just preach it. It'll be fine. Just as long as you give people, give everybody credit. And I thought, well, I just don't know that I can. So what I will say is that this will be drawing heavily from what I learned from him. Because Buechner is, among other things, a novelist, as well as a Presbyterian minister, has been his whole life. And so his perspective on things is somewhat different. And for the first time in a long time, someone took me to the story in a way that I hadn't been there before. And one of the things that he points out at the beginning, and one of the things that I think is possible for all of us, is we hear these things over and over again, and somebody talks about them, or maybe they don't. We hear them read for us. We read them, as he puts it, in some dreary two-column Bible. You read these stories, and they just sort of, they're just there. He said, but just imagine it for a moment, what it might have been like. And trying to put yourself there. So imagine what it would be like if you were there and you actually bumped into Jesus. You could sort of feel the solidity of him as a person, which is something we often lose sight of. And he went on to talk about Jairus. And we don't know much about Jairus. Matthew also relates the story. He doesn't even give him his name there. And we know that Jairus is a temple, what did they call him? A temple leader or a synagogue ruler. We don't even know what that means, really. It's not a title that's come down to us. But we do know that Jairus is an important person. So for Jairus to come and throw himself at Jesus' feet is unusual to begin with. And it helps us realize right from there that something has gone amiss. And Jairus says, my little daughter is dying. Please come. Lay your hands on her because that will heal her. We find out later that his daughter's 12. Well, 12 isn't really little. But what it does is it connects us with what Jairus is going through. Our children, in some senses, are always little to us. Because that's when we first met them. That's when we first held them. That's when we first realized how much we loved them. And at times, as far as I can tell, for the rest of our lives, every once in a while, they'll become little again, no matter how old they are, when we think of them in crisis. And Jairus says, my little daughter is dying. You need to come. And so Jesus goes, and he goes through this crowd. We have the other story of the woman who's been suffering from bleeding for a number of years, and she's healed through her own faith. And as they're going along, messengers come. Well, and the messengers come not to give good news by any means. But the messengers come, and like messengers often do, they don't spend a lot of time beating around the bush. They say, your daughter's dead. Your daughter's dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. What's the point? And Jairus, who thought his life was awful already, just completely blows up. Because that's what happens when the people we love die. It's not something that we just sort of move on with, especially when they're younger than us, especially when it is a surprise and a shock. And so what Jesus says is, do not fear, or don't be afraid, depending on the translation, which is such a, when you think about it, it's a strange thing to say. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of what? Your daughter's dead. What else is there? What could possibly be worse than that? What do I have to be afraid of? Once death has shown up, that sort of takes it to the end. There's nothing beyond that. And he says, only believe. And pretty much every translation you look at comes down to it's just a little phrase, don't be afraid or do not fear, and only believe. It doesn't even say believe in me. It says only believe. Believe what? Somehow life makes sense even though your daughter died? When people die, nothing makes sense. When we found out our first daughter had died, I went home and I was realizing I was holding this thing and I didn't know what it was. I was cleaning up in the kitchen because that's what you do. You do whatever is common. And it took me a while to realize I was holding a cup. In the midst of everything, you know, believe. I couldn't even recognize common objects. I don't know what Jairus was going through, but I suspect it was something similar to that. Only believe. So Jesus sends everybody else away except for the three that he's with, his Peter, James, and John, these people that are with him for most of everything, and they go to Jairus' house, and it's full of people weeping and wailing, because that's what you do. Now, here in the West, we don't do that. We do it in other ways. I think we'd probably be better off if we wept and wailed a little bit more. And Jesus comes and interrupts these people. Like Buechner says, these people hadn't learned yet that when somebody dies, you say things like, oh, it's probably a blessing, or she's in a better place, which doesn't really help much of us very much. They weep and wail, and Jesus says, no, no. The child isn't dead. The child is sleeping. And the people do what I think is a very reasonable response to this. They laugh. Because they're like the dividing line, when you get to sort of the far edges of emotion, they start to sort of cross over. And when you're weeping and wailing, going from that to laughing is actually kind of easy, which if you're on the outside, people don't understand. But they're close together, and your responses are just sort of bigger and less thought out. And so they laugh at this, because of course they laugh at that. I mean, this is not today. Very few of us have seen dead bodies. It just doesn't work that way. People don't die at home as often as they used to. But back then, everybody knew what a dead person looked like. And the chances of them being sort of misunderstanding that or missing the point are actually pretty slim. So when Jesus says, no, no, she's just sleeping, well, they laugh. And so Jesus puts them out of the house. So it's just Jairus, the child's mother, whose name we don't know, Jesus and those three, and the child. And I'd never thought about that. I'd always sort of zipped through that whole part, because I know how the story ends. Just like we do. The whole thing's been read for us. But just imagine for a moment with those people in that room. And there's this little girl with her life all ahead of her, but it's over. Lying there, probably laid out, looking peaceful. Probably washed up a little bit if she needed it. Jesus goes to this girl, takes her hand, and for whatever reason, Mark records it in Aramaic, which is probably the language Jesus spoke, which lends credence to the possibility that this story is related to Mark from one of the people who was there. So it's sort of one step away from him, not any more than that. And says, Talitha, kum, or come. Little girl, get up. And she did. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. There's no other word for it. We don't know what kind of miracle it was. Maybe she was just in a coma. Maybe Jesus knew something when he said she's just sleeping. Maybe he had an insight that she wasn't actually dead. Although, like I said, people recognized dead back then. But to take somebody out of a coma is still pretty impressive. And to invite someone back to life is as miraculous as anything has ever been. What do you think Jairus and the girl's mother thought then? I just can't even imagine the roller coaster of that day. To go from what is the worst day ever to the best day ever in a matter of moments. Must have been exhausting, if nothing else. The kind of thing you really need to take a nap after, because it just takes it all out of you to go sort of as far up and as far down as that all together. But when we think about that, When we think of that story, and we try to put ourselves in that story, there's lots of different places we can go to revisit loss and the comfort we've received, but maybe we should put ourselves as the little girl. Because even now, little girls and old girls and little boys and old boys and people who look just like us and people who look completely different than us, people who know exactly where they're going and people who barely know where they are, Jesus is reaching out to all of us and saying, come. Jesus reaches out to us and says, come, get up. Receive life. The story is as dramatic as it can get, because the life that was restored was the life that we all have. But for lots of us, Jesus reaching into the midst of chaos, whatever that looked like for us, whether anyone else would think is chaotic or not is completely irrelevant. Our chaos is our chaos. And those times when Jesus reaches in and says, come, get up, let's go. Life is back. For us is every bit as dramatic as that. Jesus has been inviting people to life always. And sometimes with this little girl, with Lazarus, Jesus himself, the life was obvious, the transition from physical death to physical life. But the transition from spiritual death, or at least that spiritual atrophy that we sometimes go through, even in the midst of our relationship with God through Jesus, when it's restored, it's as if we're alive again. Revisiting this story from that perspective was profoundly helpful for me, and I hope it is for you. Because we sometimes forget, in the midst of all that we know, and we do know lots, in all of our life experience, and we've had lots of life experience, in our experience with Jesus, and we've had lots of that too, we sometimes forget that Jesus comes and reaches out a hand and says, get up. You're alive. In another place, Jesus says, I came that you might have life and have it to the full. And these are the things that we know and we understand. But in the same way that having your children or your spouse or your friends every once in a while say out loud that they love you, it doesn't mean that you'd forgotten. But doesn't it make you feel good? To have that reminder, to have that renewed sense? Well, that's what this story did for me this week. What this story did is it reminded me that Jesus is still reaching out to people who are spiritually dead, but to people who are spiritually struggling. And he's always willing to reach out. Sometimes I have looked at my life in various parts and just thought, you know, you're sort of stalled for a while. You're not quite sure what's going on. And then something happens, miraculous like this perhaps, or through the offices of another person or a song. It takes so little sometimes to revitalize everything about you. And you move on in this new way, and later on you look back and you can see, yeah, I was almost dead. I was just doing nothing. I was just spinning my wheels and I was putting in time, and now I'm not. Jesus does that even now. Doesn't always use Aramaic, doesn't always have his physical hand involved. But Jesus is still inviting us to get up, to move around, to live the life that we have in a way that is empowered and energized by him, where the difference can be as much as the difference between death and life. So on this Canada Day, when we think of sort of where we are and who we are, and we think of other places, it's good to be reminded that even in the midst of of the wonders that we enjoy here. We still have times when we need to be encouraged to get up, but to also be reminded that maybe part of our role is to be that hand of Jesus. And maybe we're part of inviting someone to get up and to live. Amen.